Hello, this is Daryl War, and I am doing another update and possibly spoiler cast for the sake that, well, I'm starting to really understand what's going on and whether it's haters listening to go gossip on big tech social media sites or if it's concerned, kind-hearted people who have lost their ability to efficiently communicate and use email. Well, I gotta find some way to keep y'all company, and pen pals too. In fact, I am hoping that one of my best supporters has made it home okay, because I know she was on a trip, and yeah, I'm really hoping, because I can't remember what the news as far as dates were concerned in ending her voyage. So, well, I'm hoping she is all right, and to get her take on episode 16, A Death in the Family, so that I can do a retrospective for that, and we could carry on in that fashion. Because I'd like the retrospectives to actually maybe include a little bit of her thoughts as well as everybody else's. As much as I say nobody's talking to me, I got a handful now, and I'm very grateful for that. And I'd rather this be focused on those people, the handful that are giving me their take on the narrative and the situations and the characters and all those things. But of course, there are way more blah-de-blah shows of just me talking than the narrative audio plays. And that problem has arisen from the sake that commercial social networks are extremely addictive and very good at increasing misinformation and allowing others to believe they're getting other humans of sound mind talking to them. And so then it just kind of collapses from there. Because if you wanted the real deal, or as they say, the real McCoy, you would be asking me directly. And that's not happening, because those sites are so addictive. And rather than anyone seeing things as, well, this is a commercial venture, and if I use it, then I'm just allowing that commercial venture to gain more profit. That's not how it's viewed. It's viewed as, this is where the people are, and this is where I'm going to get solid facts from other people. And as longtime listeners might understand at this point, that is not the case. You get better information from the source. And that is sad, too, just because I have had a lot of really good friends lost via those networks and also pen friends because it's so ingrained in the culture to go to these commercial sites of choice to get the quote-unquote real deal. And then what happens is they just see probably huge threads of gossip and most likely hate streams and hate threads and that kind of thing, and they don't know what to do, so they just stop talking to me about the subject. And that is sad, because I'm happy to recede more and more from any kind of public view, and I'd rather this be a pen pal venture with people in direct communication. So I think all it really does for me is confirm my old skepticism I had in the late 1990s about all this stuff, about the internet, about going online, and all those fellows who were just so self-assured. This is the wave of the future, and it's going to be great. And I often had suspicions that there was not going to be a good outcome. And here we are. It is not a good outcome. So that is about it. And of course, the people who kept on trying to convert me to that way of thinking were fairly averse to writing letters, fairly averse to the idea that the mail was going to keep going. And it's like, well, yeah, but we're living in physical space. No, the mail is going to keep going, even if it's just commercial packages. They didn't seem to be quite aware of what communities of pen pals had been doing outside of their perspective. And I did know. So I went back to square one. And as much as there are a fair amount of pen pal relationships that soured due to the kind of new regime of commercial social sites, there have been enough. Working really hard to find who wasn't going to be touched by that or who, you know, shrugged it off. Like, I can't take that seriously. So I found enough. And thank you very much for being that enough. And I don't know what to tell people who went down the wrong paths, because this is a new problem. And now with other things that are going on, as far as a kind of mass hysteria, which I don't want to touch too much on, we're seeing the results. I had someone come and visit me within the last few days, and she was saying, I knew that you would be available to socialize with my cabin fever because you saw all this coming. I was like, yeah, yes, I did. And that's the thing, is that when you consider, oh, well, it's just fan fiction, and maybe you're doing a little more with a podcast and da 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 da. But the trivial gets hit first, folks. And as Holmes is famous for saying, fictional character or no, there's nothing more important than a trifle. So, of course, I saw everything earlier because it was in what is considered a very trivial realm. Now, stepping into that subject a little further, it's only trivial in that it's not on a grander scale that would make it to a newspaper and that kind of thing. It's not on that idea that we have of this is real life and that kind of thing, because it's playing with fiction and fantasy and areas of supernatural speculation. But at the same time, it has an importance in a way that we have a hard time recognizing. Focusing on a story, being able to digest a story, being able to understand what the characters are going through, getting our friend's take. If something's a little confusing, we would usually be in the same room during a commercial break able to ask, well, what was that about? And why did he say that? And why did she do this? And, you know, the friend would be able to explain it. Go, oh, okay. Or vice versa. They didn't get it. And then you explain it. It's like, oh, no, they said this, not the other. So, yeah, and that's one of the problems with the big tech social sites, is that you think you're going there to do that, and instead you just get caught up in this gossip carousel where everybody's just coming up with even more outlandish speculation of what I said or what somebody else said or what characters are doing, and it just gets all kind of rambly, whatever. And again, like I say, all it does is give more revenue to those sites. That's pretty much all that does. You don't really get answers there. And that's why I stepped away, and I have to tell you, it's been better than high school graduation. It's been more relieving than when you get that diploma in your hand and you're like, I'm done. It's more relieving than that. And another thing I wanted to add is that if you heard these noises in the February show, that is my water bottle. So you're hearing a very sober Daryl War, both with booze and with social media. So that's what those noises are, if you heard those in February. Now, to go further, hopefully we'll get to some narrative here. Seamus was letting me know over one of the weekends we hang out that, you know, he was listening to the intro to episode one and kind of getting, even kind of misconstruing a few things I was saying in that, where it's like, oh, you're making fun of people who are attracted to Barnabas. And I'm like, no, that's not what I said. And he realized very quickly. No, I said, there's some people who want to roll around with him. And I said, but my quote unquote obsession is a lot different. That's what I said. But the thing about that conversation, it told me, this is a close friend getting what I'm saying wrong. Heaven knows what other people are getting wrong that don't talk to me directly. That is just scary. And there was also something else. I want to say it was from February of 2018. I had a pen friend by email. There was something in there about a Martian, because I had a pen friend mentioning other potential love interests Angelique could have. And one of them was somebody from my favorite Martian. And the pen pal heard that and thought I said Marvin the Martian. And I was like, no, no. And then I had to type out all this stuff that I'd said just to get it right. But it took so much effort. Yeah, so if people are getting what I'm saying wrong, that's a problem. And you probably should be in direct communication with me to find out what I said so I can tell you directly. I'm not sure if that's ever going to happen, but sometimes it does. So there is that too. But it was funny because Seamus is like, he was feeling kind of bad that he was skipping my blah-de-blah intros. And I was like, oh, by all means, skip them. Because I want to focus on the narrative. I've been saying that from the beginning. I want to focus on the narrative. Even when I went into those social media zones, it's like, everybody's still, they're agreeing with me. And then it's like, they just want to talk and gossip about me and who is this person and let's go look for her private crap. And I'm like, oh man, what a waste of time. But again, with social media, that is the point, to waste your time, to keep you as addicted to those sites as possible. And all varieties of like buttons are really good at that. There's all kinds of ways we've been hoodwinked and distracted and worse than television. But yeah, well, I told him, just like I keep on telling all y'all, let's talk about the story. Also, if you go to thepitofultimatedarkshadows.wordpress.com, if you've been going there, please scroll down to see all the information. I know that collage is big and maybe it's in the way, but I am very proud of the darn silly thing. And I know, too, that it probably made your eyes into tennis balls and, oh my gosh, this person's some kind of bionic woman putting all these characters together. But it's been almost a decade since I started creating this thing more publicly. So yeah, for heaven's sake, just scroll down when you go to that site. Please scroll down so you can see the information and don't just get mesmerized by the collage or that kind of thing. Yeah, if you need something to do right now in a kind of social isolation, which I am very used to, that circumstance, I'm more than happy to focus on the narrative, focus on the story, focus on the characters. More than happy. Been always wanting that. And then some of the other log entries, my kind of more blah-de-blah log entries. I see takes on the promise of what praise can do. Probably should be more constructiveness, but I just wanted to put a happy spin on it. And the log entry on the subject of Victoria Winners, which is also very good. Just, you know, focusing on the story, focusing on the characters, focusing on why these things happened in Dark Shadows the way that they did through various other incarnations of it. And yeah, I still love While We Wait, Jonathan Speaks, because yeah, I made up a lot of that stuff just because I was watching those interviews and PBS promos and and a lot of people that I actually know, you know, in that handful, like really love that take on it's like, now I'm going to go to Hortons and be smug about this promo. And then it was scary because I did find a picture of Jonathan Frid outside of Tim Hortons. I don't think he was going in there. I'm not sure if he went to go get coffee or tea or anything, but it was him in, I think, a parking lot somewhere outside of Tim Hortons, and I was just like, oh, look at that. I made the joke, look at that. And then it was funny because somewhere in that log entry where I was just making up stuff that he might have said in speculation, not actually a quotation, I was just making stuff that he might have said. You know, to support PBS and to kind of get people more interested in what happens on Dark Shadows. You know, I picked my nose in this episode, you know. And I told Seamus about that. He was all, was there an, it? I'm all, yeah. And I told him not which episode, but what was happening in the episode. And I'm like, when you gotta itch, you gotta itch. Well, yeah, he totally, you know. It's not something that I feel is anything to be ashamed of at all. Because you look at the situation of how they did stuff. I think Kathleen Lee Scott mentioned repertory group, you know, kind of like a theater group more than a television group. And it has that feeling. And that's why, I mean, I know what social networks do to people. But at the end of the day, this is a television show that constantly reminds you that it is a television show because of all the flubs, because of the camera knocking into a wall and everything shaking like there's an earthquake, but there's no earthquake. Everybody just keeps talking and saying their lines and being on their mark and acting accordingly. But yeah, that camera shaking, they don't know that it shook. You know, you could compare it to Star Trek a little bit, where they shake the camera and everybody else shakes and they just get used to leaning in one direction or another direction. Whereas on Dark Shadows, the camera shakes and people just act like nothing happened. You know, you're watching the show and the entire set is shifting in your view, but it's nothing to them. They will see nothing. Just keep on business as usual. So what else can I tell you here? Again, I'm kind of doing this just to see if I can keep all y'all company and calm and at home. And so let's go through. I definitely want to start working on the podcast for the marriage novel again. And I have a recording for that going through the healing chapters. I just have to figure out where the file is and what I want to trim and what more I want to say and all that. And then we got episode 21, Up the Damn Staircase. Done the demo, but what I'm going through with episode 21 in The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows is definitely affirming again and again and again, do not do separate performances for these characters. Do it like you used to do, where you just have a few characters per scene, do one recording, and just go back and forth. Barring maybe Willie and Wadsworth, maybe Barnabas, just because with Willie and Wadsworth, they're so different from each other. And they're interacting a lot in these episodes. So it is a strain on my vocal cords to do that. I mean, I love those boys. I call them my boys, and they're doing so well. But barring some characters to maybe do performances in an isolated sense, I think I'm just going to have to go back and forth. And going back and forth might help matters, because sometimes if I'm doing Julia's voice and then I do Maggie's voice and they're separated, I put them together and they're sounding a little too similar for whatever reason. But if I'm doing a straight read, I already know there has to be more contrast between characters. And you might have noticed this too with my LibriVox books. So for whatever reason, if I'm doing one scene reading, I will kind of automatically just naturally put in more contrast between the voices. Whereas if I do the performances isolated, sometimes it's just too close with certain characters. And that's not to say that Julia and Maggie sound similar at all. I'm one person doing this. So trying to get whatever caricature or whatever performance accurate as I'm listening to their real life voices or the recording of their real life voices, sometimes I'm not contrasting enough and I need to contrast more. Whereas Willie and Wadsworth already have so much contrast to get them accurate, it is better to do them separately. And there is that. And I learned that in episode 13, because episode 13 sounds great, Willie and Wadsworth, that scene, but it was a strain for me to do that, because they are so different. And Milligan and Hecubus are in one go, because they're easy different. They're simple different. So yeah, I think I'll just go through 21 here, just to let you know what is hopefully coming up someday. That, yeah, we got them introducing the episode, going straight to the RMS Queen Elizabeth, Bill and Elizabeth talking somewhere. I think it's kind of in one of those sort of ballrooms where there'd be a piano already and Elizabeth's playing it. That's where they have their talk. And again, this scene in episode 21 is the one where Bill is going on and on and on and on about what happened. And you can easily see in some of this dialogue from Bill, much of which was given to me by O'Sheen because I gave her what I had and then she added a ton more. And so I was like, okay. But the dialogue itself is pretty incredible because it kind of shows you this is how crazy soap operas get. Because Bill Malloy is talking about things that happened in that first year. And there was just so much of that going on. It's 5 days a week and little by little, all this stuff occurs. But when you hear it in a huge stream of events, it just sounds unreal. It's just like, how could all these things happen in this little town? But it's still good, and there is some romance in there, and there's also Bill wondering if Elizabeth has figured out that Maggie and Josette are the same. Because as a ghost, he would get wind of that, because there is Josette as an astral projection of Maggie Evans. So that astral projection would be a ghost too, and other ghosts would be like, oh, who is that? I think I recognize who that is. Wait a second. And figuring that out. And also because Bill had that with his ghost. He was kind of teaming up with the widows. I almost feel like he's almost like one of the widows by proxy. But, you know, whatever the more masculine version of that would be. The title. So then we'd flip over to the Blue Whale. And Maggie talking to Bob and just trying to get the goods on what happened with a werewolf smashing into the Blue Whale. Bob is doing great as far as our entertainment purposes are going. Otherwise, Bob's not doing too great at all. He's just like, oh my gosh. One thing I think I could let slip is he's just trying to deal with, you know, just losing people, like losing the barmaid. He's like, this town gets so crazy, but I always survive it. Like, what is up with that? And it's like, well, because you are fixture in this television show, sir. That's why it is. Yeah, she doesn't tell him that, though. But that's what we know as the listeners slash viewers. Then there's a lot of David and Amy and trying to get to that West Wing area and figuring out if the flashlight works. Can we go to the West Wing? And pretty much the same as on the original show, but components are switched around a little bit for the sake that I'm trying to synchronize the timeline with the original Dark Shadows timeline. And then there's Maggie and Barnabas. So yeah, there's another six-person thing at the old house, so it's a little bit similar to episode 14 where we had about six people in Dr. Hoffman's office, and that's really difficult. But you get a lot of information about what's going on, what they're going through, and just trying to get used to. Because again, we have Barnabas and Maggie. Maggie is a reincarnation of Josette. So they're getting used to each other again in a very unique sense. Because there's so much more to Josette now that she's been at least two other people while he was, you know, stuck in the box. So there's a lot more going on. And she just gets used to that. And that was also, just to mention, one good thing about the relationships that I've garnered through this project is having fans who are interested be able to respond in a helpful way. Melissa's a very keen viewer of the original Dark Shadows program, and she's able to pick up on the details, and they're details that I need to discuss with somebody. So even as I was going through that time many years ago where I was wondering why Maggie wasn't reciprocating Willie, and oh, wouldn't it be nice if he was improving, and just sitting there and asking her, oh, well, why is she not reciprocating Willie? And then it starts to dawn on me what's going on with her and how she is getting bits of feedback from potential memories and also potential memories from an even further time back. And they always just leave you on the edge of your seat, but I was figuring it out because to me, I'd seen soap operas before, so I'm like, this is going to be pretty simple. So it seems very complicated, but at the time I was originally viewing it, I'm like, okay. Because a lot of these characters are more or less based on their actions, but there was more going on, which kept me interested. So my disappointment in Maggie not reciprocating Willie led to me listening to Maggie because I was curious why. And when I told Melissa that, she said, thank you. I said, no problem. And I was seeing that Maggie Evans, she was frustrated in always having these uncertainties about her life and all these questions that couldn't be answered. And of course, they continue that onward because it's a daytime drama. And that's what you do. Just keep people hanging and wondering and not getting resolution. But then I also had the benefit of other versions of Dark Shadows where I'm like, okay, so they're switching out Maggie for Victoria, but there's still all this questioning, who am I? And with that benefit, I was able to keep going in the direction that I felt was right. And of course, then I saw the 2012 film and I was like, wow, okay, this is a very distinct reveal that I am going in the right direction with The Pit, because I had already written two episodes. So yes, technically The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows in creation is older than that film. So yeah, I just was listening to Maggie, and me and Melissa have talked about, you know, what's going on in The Pit. And I'm like, it is fascinating. It's very much a relief for Maggie to be getting these answers. However, she's still getting caught up in sort of random flashbacks coming at random moments. And I was able to handle that too, because that's what happened in Sailor Moon a lot of the time. If you remember, anybody who'd seen Sailor Moon, like the anime from the 1990s. And me and Helena have joked about this too, where I was like, yeah, you know, where they're not sure what's going on. There's always this thing, whether it's like a season / series of Sailor Moon or whether it's one of the 60-minute films, there's always seems to be this one moment where they're not sure who this villain is or what the history is. And somebody suddenly says, I remember, just at the right moment. And I think in Hearts and Ice, it was Artemis who was like, ah, hey, I recall who this person is from back in the Moon Kingdom. Okay, so that's how you work this stuff. It's either going to be Andre / Sam or Josette / Maggie. I remember now, or this just came up, or whatever. It's just, so yeah, that's how it is. And strangely enough, in my research for reincarnation, it's not quite like that, but there's some similar patterns there with people who have had the experiences. I'm not saying it's true. I'm just saying people who have revealed what experiences they have. It's a little similar, where they're kind of going down certain historical areas and just getting these flashbacks and, oh, you know, and kind of tripping out. And how was I able to write this down before I saw it? How was I able to draw this before we went there? Just little things like that. But the main thing I wanted to express is, yeah, we have a much happier Josette and a Maggie that is learning how to handle all these different aspects of herself, because they're revealed to her more and more with each progressing episode. And the other lovely thing that I was talking to Melissa about is it helps Barnabas to be less alone, feel less alone. And even in episode 16, he's calling Sam Monsieur Dupre. So Sam, as Andre, as the reincarnation of Andre Dupre, not in the original Dark Shadows, but in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, that gives Barnabas a feeling of not being so alone. And that's why it was such a huge deal in episode 14, where Barnabas figured out that Sam was a reincarnation of Andre too. He's like, I'm getting everything I want and more. You know, that's what he's kind of thinking. Because, yeah, he's not alone anymore in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. He has two people who remember the 1790s with him. So that's good, too. That's good for Barnabas. And just everybody finding out who they are and gaining the ability to problem solve more from that and from other neighbors like Wadsworth, other, you know, show and movie neighbors, and just able to work all these things out. So then, yeah, we have the Willie and Wadsworth scene going back to episode 21. And I'm probably going to cut some of the dialogue from this and save it for another time. But going back to the little thing about the milk and eggs, and some of it's a little weird, but it's already recorded, so I'm not going to worry about it. I think overall it all fits. And we get Wadsworth answering Willie, wondering, why did you say you didn't know me? So there is that. But there's a little thing about him paying back for the Hill House funds that I think I'm going to save for another time, because I feel like it's probably just too much information in one go. And that's fine. And then Hoffman and Stokes arrive at the old house, and they're already talking about werewolf stuff. They're already kind of prepping themselves for this conversation, or what's going to come up in later episodes. So that's good. And then there's stuff about Willie's calligraphy and having a glass pen, and then a lot of funny stuff just with, you know, having to deal with Chris Jennings, and we're pretty sure it's him. He hasn't revealed totally. He's been doing the avoid the topic dance, and it's like, oh, it's really frustrating. And it reminds Maggie of what she experienced as Kitty Soames in the 1890s, which Barnabas doesn't quite understand yet. And it's great, too, because Maggie understands this is just how people talk around here, and I'm tired of it. I want to just get to the meat of the problem and fix it. I don't want everybody just dancing with their talk. And she's just looking forward to handling the situation and getting to an area of life where things are going to be not so dramatic. Oh, and then we do have some Hoffman and Stokes loving. And that's nice. And then we've got Samantha and Darren, and having to tell Darren what's going on. And I've tried to tell Pen Power too. Come on, you know why Darren would be interested in Collinsport and Colin Wood, and he, yeah, you gotta, you know, if you remember Darren Stevens, it'll come to you. Trust me. There's a really good reason he'd be interested when he finds out where Samantha needs to go. Yeah, and then we got Amy and David getting to the West Wing, and all the goofy stuff coming over there, and the telephone, and getting back to her room for the family history, and looking over that. And then, of course, since Elizabeth isn't there, and Maggie's kind of busy, I just had Roger just like, aren't your children ever going to bed? Just, you know, a nice little talk there, and I was like, well, yeah. And that's why I always say, Roger's the perfect fifth wheel. I mean, he really does get some things going. Like O'Sheen had mentioned, you know, he's one of the villains, and it's a big problem with things that Roger does. I couldn't, oh my gosh, like in that first year during, I think right before the Matthew Morgan kidnapping of Victoria Winters, Roger was such a hoser. It's like, you know, Victoria's downstairs and she's stuck in that kind of basement room at the Great House. And she's already worried. She's already seen things of a supernatural element. And then Roger has to, behind a door, pretend he's one of the ghosts. And we're like, what was up with that, you big hoser? Like, so yeah, first year Roger, not such a nice guy. But then as you move along, he's just the comic relief in a lot of ways. So we continue that in The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. He's just perfect fifth wheel. If you need something to go through a little bit quicker, a little bit smoother, hire Roger Collins. Invite him to the scene. And then for 22, yeah, so far the title is The Endless Night at Collinwood. More fun from Milligan and Hecubus. More stuff with Amy and Quentin, Amy and David, and just moving along in that same way. However, yeah, I've been kind of picking up a pattern to how to do this, which I'm really looking forward to getting back to, where I just let the episodes play while I'm a little focused on something where I don't have to pay too much attention, because, you know, Dark Shadows goes very, very slow. And some of my pen friends know what this is that I'm doing kind of off to the side while the show is playing pretty much right in front of me. So as I go through about 6 episodes of Dark Shadows, I start to pick it up. Okay, this is what I remember seeing before. This is what's happening. Then the next day I play it again, and it starts to feed in. I remember what I'm doing in my episodes to try to synchronize what's happening in the original show with what I've altered in mine. And then the ideas start coming, and I start taking notes. And I'll pause to take the notes, and it just starts to flow that way. And that is the tandem I really want to keep going. That's kind of the Satori of the moment, if you know what I mean. It's like just fantastic. Yeah. I would love to get back to that on a more regular basis, but I figured out how to do it, and I'm really happy about that. So, having explained that, what ended up happening as I was watching the original episodes of Dark Shadows is that there are things that are going on that are outside of what I have already resolved and people that have been rescued. So in the original Dark Shadows, Victoria's still there, Victoria's still the governess, and I'm like, well, I don't have that anymore, but I can use some of these components. Because Amy can hear the widows, and she can kind of talk to them, and she could go around asking, and it's like, but in the circumstances I have now, Maggie Evans is the governess, so what do we do with that? Ah, if you think about it, Maggie, as the reincarnation of Josette, she's also technically a widow with the astral projection thing. So, what would she do? Maybe go and talk to the widows. Her old girlfriends. So, yeah. And that's where I go, wow, this is so fascinating. Because through various incarnations of Dark Shadows, we were kind of reaching for things like that. And I get to be the person with the honor of continuing in that direction. This really complicated character with so much information that she's not sure what all it is anyway. Also, it's wonderful to be the Maggie Evans of the 60s because she got a great sense of humor. So she uses that to process all of this weird stuff. That's why I really loved how the Maggie with the blonde wig was very kiss my grits and down to earth in that way, in the kind of no-nonsense way. Then she started to alter a little bit and became a lot warmer, but she still kind of had that no-nonsense vibe in some way, so we got a more complicated person. But I do need to work on this script for 22 because at some point other characters have to know who Quentin is. And I'm not sure I've established that in the other scenes. But his name does have to come up so that by the end of the episode we can have everybody kind of knowing who they're looking for the seance. And again, that was something that was happening in the original episodes that I watched where it's like, how can we incorporate what's going on in the original show with what's going on in the pit, but in a more focused on resolution, kind of cutting off the bits that have already been solved and just going with more problem solving while still maintaining things that happened in the original. Oh, and there's also Sarah and Barnabas. There's a great scene coming up. I was really enjoying telling Oisin about this over the phone months ago, where Sarah knows that there are these changes happening. And if she doesn't really have David Collins' friendship to rely on anymore because she gets this idea, okay, there's something happening. I have no control over this because these are entities that I really don't know, but I'm aware of what kind of entities they are. So she could go rush to her brother and tell her brother and still be very helpful. And of course, Sarah's suspicions, because she's a child, even as a ghost, because she's a child, initially Barnabas is kind of coming up with, oh, well, it's just this. It's just David making friends with Amy. Like, no, you got to hear me out. There's something bad going on. And then finally he believes her and she just says, I need you to understand what's happening. So again, it's problem solving resolution coming from multiple different components. And of course, at some point, Barnabas thanks her for sticking around. And she just goes, where else was I going to go? It's very cute. In this way that I never thought I could write and I never thought I could do. I just, okay. They say, oh, sappy. Well, then you get attached and it's not sappy anymore. And then there's some more stuff with Amy and Maggie, because if you remember in the original, Amy ran to Victoria's room. So I just have Amy worried running to Maggie's room. And then more stuff goes on. It's so weird because I don't think this is in the usual word count for pit episodes. So I've actually got quite a bit of space where I can add things. But it seems like so much is going on. And of course, Maggie gets wind. Oh, the widows are outside. Maybe I should do something about it. And when she comes back, it's Carolyn and Maggie, just one of those midnight. That's why it's the endless night at Collinwood, because everybody keeps on getting up and going back to bed, getting up and going back to bed. So Carolyn and Maggie have some walking down the hall. Oh, hey. Because, yeah, they've already grown this rapport in episode 20, where there's no concern. They kind of rapid-fire it in episode 20, where this is a spooky place and spooky things happen, Maggie says to Carolyn. Carolyn's like, oh, you think? Yeah, you don't have to paint a pretty picture with me. I've been living in this house all my life. So by episode 22, what I have so far for them is just, again, being on the up and up and trying to figure that out. And I was talking to the widows. Were you really? And of course, that gets Carolyn excited. And it's great because Carolyn is kind of one of the norms, so to speak, one of the, for want of a better word, muggle, but she's always heard these stories. And now she's getting kind of these personal proofs from people she knows. So it's a big trip for her. And of course, she's already met the ghost of Captain Greg. She's already shared words. She knows somebody else in Maine, like Carolyn Muir, who this is just part of life here and, you know, that kind of stuff. So she has more grounding in these supernatural occurrences, and they become happier occurrences too. So with this kind of scenario between Carolyn and Maggie, which I just adore in The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, there's all this information that's getting shared. There's almost like the gossip of the ghosts that the mortals can know, and it's great. It, again, sort of makes it a little more Addams Family than Collins, but they're excited at the alteration between we have to be on the edge of our seat and worried to, oh, okay, yeah, let's, you know, invite everyone to the party of resolving everything and fixing it and seeing where we could go with what. And also Maggie saying, hey, my hands are getting fuller and fuller. Can you handle Chris Jennings, you and Tony maybe? And it's like, oh yeah, sure. You know, we'll do what we got to do. That gives Carolyn a bit more to do. And then also because Maggie Evans is now the governess, oh, hey, I just worked it out in town. If you need any school supplies, you know, we go back to some of the more everyday mortal stuff. And that actually tickled Oisin because she's like, oh, yeah, ghost talk and supernatural and this and that. Oh, by the way, if you need pencils or rulers or anything on that order, just going back to the everyday mortal stuff, it just gets salted in, which I just adore working with these characters. Then, of course, by this time, Amy's gotten up from bed and gone back to bed so many times, she's just wiped out. So when she wants the gossip from Maggie, there's not going to be much of it because she's just wiped out. At first, she's excited, and then it's like, just conked out. And that helps me. And then there is a Victoria Winters, Morticia Addams. Actually, it was so great going through the Addams Family and finding out, because my parents-in-law got me a few years ago all the DVDs of the Addams Family. So I was set, and it was just, it's just been such a blessing to just go through those while everybody was getting crazier and crazier on social media. So I had that to do. And so I was just taking notes and just trying to find everything that I could. I would have loved to have more Addams Family fans be able to help me with this, but, you know, everybody going cuckoo. And it's the previous cuckoo compared to this March 2020 cuckoo. It would have been really nice, but, you know, everybody just get minds wiped out. So I had to do a lot of this on my own, and I had other people to occasionally consult with on the phone about it. But yeah, I was just writing notes, and the activity list just got bigger and bigger. I mean, the recipe list was great when I went through both seasons of The Addams Family and every single episode twice, and just writing. And then I could, in another book, put a list of the recipes and the activities. And I did that for the Munsters as well. And I'd always wanted to share them, but if there's not going to be any talk for it, there's no reason for me to even go through that effort. However, one of the things that the Addams Family will do is play Parcheesi. So I'm like, okay, so why don't we have Morticia and Victoria and Peter playing Parcheesi? And while they're playing Parcheesi, Gomez is trying to work out getting Peter Bradford records in name, in the Peter Bradford name. So he's not Jeff Clark anywhere anymore. So that's Gomez's thing, and it just becomes a really fun scene in episode 22 for the Addams Family house. And I don't know if any of y'all, like, oh gosh, where was it? Was it 18 or 19 episode of The Pit? There was a scene somewhere, and I've been wanting to do it for years, and I hope y'all enjoyed it and saw the humor in it, where it's harpsichord music. So that's obviously Lurch. Then you hear, my name is Victoria Winters. But she's not at Collinwood anymore. She's at the Addams Family. So she's kind of doing that same introduction that she would do at the beginning of Dark Shadows. But it's a different house. It's a different show. It's different people. I've been wanting to do that for years. It's finally out there. I'm so happy. So just going through further and further. And Gomez is just getting fed up with who he's talking to because it should, in Gomez's mind, this is an easy fix. And Peter gets a little worried, like, oh, there's all this fuss on my account. And no, but Gomez wants to do it. And he's really persistent about it. You know, he wants to help. And that's been an idea I've had for ages, to get Peter Bradford, be Peter Bradford in record, in name, as opposed to Jeff Clark. And I'm like, oh, the Addams Family, they could do it. Of course they can do it. Great. It's wonderful. And then we have a scene in 22 of Maggie is going to the old house looking for Barnabas, finds Wadsworth and Willie first. Letting him know they have another problem, and Willie scoffs. Oh. What a change. How unusual. And also, you know, when Barnabas gets wind that she's there, he calls her Maggie, what is the trouble? And she says, at this point, Josette just might be as good as a name as before. Just to let you know, you can switch it if you want to. I'm comfortable with that. And it's kind of cool, too, because Willie is getting the understanding that, okay, because it blows his mind that Maggie actually is Josette, because he was with her during the kidnapping where it all felt like total mind control. But Willie's on the up and up a bit more now, and so he can digest what Maggie's saying to everybody. And he's kind of like, oh, it is true. You weren't always playing around. And she says, us widows can get quite playful given the chance. And just what she figured out from the widows. And then there's also some discussion of the ghosts that are coming in, and Wadsworth recognizes that there are ghosts, the ones from what is called the gay 90s or the mauve decade. And Willie says, you mean ragtime, Wadsworth? Because I figured, yeah, there's some way that Willie can understand all this. And he says, very good, Mr. Loomis, 1895 to 1919 was the main time frame of it. And he looks at Barnabas, Wadsworth looks at Barnabas and says, sir, you can see I've become much better at secreting books for others to read, at least certain highlights, because, you know, Willie wouldn't be thinking about that if there wasn't something laying around that he would have picked up to read. And he might have known, but it wouldn't be fresher in his head. But yeah, with ragtime, as far as I know, it's 1895 to 1919. And yeah, Maggie, anyway, I was advised to call upon Professor Stokes for another seance to find out more about these ghosts. And of course, that's where I need to implement Quentin in there somewhere, because it's all kind of vague now with what I'm looking at, right, and telling you. So again, we're just getting bits of information from different people to try and, you know, very Star Trek The Next Generation teamwork, which I feel is fine, because, you know, there was that episode in the retroactive continuity where Kitty's kind of jumped back to the 1790s, and Barnabas has also jumped back through the portrait somehow to the 1790s, and they have a different outcome. But the outcome itself with Countess Dupre in the original Dark Shadows showing up instead of Barnabas to save Josette, it was like, yeah, that was like a Star Trek The Next Generation switcheroo. So I kind of feel like that evidence in the original show, it's possible to do this with these characters, because they had done it on the original in certain respects. But with these scenes in 22, it's everybody just giving each other the proper information from reliable sources and that kind of thing. Oh, wow. I'd forgotten about this. And Barnabas at some point asks, is Sarah our little one? Because Maggie calls her that, even this early. And she says she is, and someday perhaps again. So if you know the novel, there you go. Okay, and then I have my notes for that. And and so it's starting to kind of wrap up. I think there needs to be more, but they'll have that seance. And I remember consulting Oisin about this as well, where Magda shows up possessing Carolyn in the seance in the original Dark Shadows. And Oisin was saying, yeah, it was always so strange to me that it was Carolyn. And we both were like, but they didn't know exactly what direction they were going. So that's what they did at the time. So in this case, it would obviously be Dr. Hoffman. But you get a little bit more, because we have a little bit more with the original show already having aired 50 years ago, and DVDs of it, etc., etc. So, yeah, there is that. It really hasn't been worked out yet how I'm going to end this, if there's going to be more scenes. There has to be definitely more dialogue and things changed, but
one thing that would be fascinating and likely very lovely for the end of The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, episode 22... is because we're in that seance where Hoffman's possibly getting taken over by maybe a spark regression, is we already have Professor Stokes jumping in kind of that same way that in the original Chris was jumping for Carolyn and breaking her out of it, and for romantic concern, admiration, and that kind of thing. So with that already ending in my rough draft for episode 22, it might be nice to possibly end it with some of the ideas I've learned working with Professor Stokes and Dr. Hoffman, that he becomes much less aloof and explains himself and is able to tell her why he cares for her so deeply. It's very similar to the first episode in The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, where Wadsworth is driving Barnabas home from the coffee shop, and about Maggie, he asks Barnabas, you might find her more familiar than simply in her looks. haven't you ever liked her for herself?
And that would be the same direction that Stokes would care for Julia. Perhaps there was this previous life as a married couple. However, he's studious, she's studious. They're both grounded in the modern day. And even if they've loved each other in a previous life for themselves, then again, loving each other for themselves in this life.
That's about where I am for 21 and 22. And like I said, direct communication would help this a lot better, but I know the ability for that is very difficult just due to the commercial communications, you know, taking a lot of people over and, to me, taking away a lot of the things that we had once upon a time, just with the distractions and the brain science, the ability to coerce people into making decisions. And it's really tough if, you know, all your loved ones or all the people you know are on these things, and then you just feel like you have no choice. You know, you have to use them. But me getting away from that, the further I get away, the gladder I am, the more relieved I am to get away. Even at a time like right now, I'm happy to have the peace and quiet. I got actual real problems around here that we got to deal with. I've got owies that need to be healed, and we have actual physical structure problems that we have to fix with home repair and that kind of thing. So the quiet is good for me. I'm just concerned about everybody else. But if you need something to do in your isolation, I have been here for a long time, and I understand the isolation because that's how I pretty much always live. And it got even worse in the last 7 years, of course. But with the right friends and the right pen friends and the right phone calls, and I feel like I'm probably morally doing quite a bit better than all y'all. But if you're a pen friend, you might be just as better as me, you know, just as in the right spot. So, yeah, I do say I'm sorry, even though it's not my fault, but I'm in a better headspace because I'm away from a lot of that. Because I understand the more you use it, the more you're just giving money to people who aren't doing much of a service to a lot of us, because they're just playing around for revenue. They're just playing with our weaknesses for revenue. But I'm also doing this podcast just because it's like, well, maybe you need my company one way or another. Hopefully it's not going to do more damage by you running to third parties and trying to figure out what I'm saying. It really is better for you to come to me directly and ask me what I meant by what, or, you know, was it Marvin the Martian or my favorite Martian? It was my favorite Martian in February of 2018. Just that little bit. And like Seamus was saying, you know, he feels bad that to skip the intros. I'm all, by all means, skip the intros. I want to focus on the characters. I want to focus on the narrative. And I've been saying that for ages. And that's why a lot of those blah blah shows and this one have happened. Because I'm not getting the direct contact. I'm not getting focus on the narrative. You know, initially it was a lot of people trained to criticize and look for flaws, like factory workers. And I was just thinking, rude. But in retrospect, now I go, oh, that was the training. It wasn't because they couldn't focus on the narrative. It was because everybody was leaning in this direction of criticize, criticize, criticize. And it's like, all right, you know, but that's not what I'm looking for. And I'm having a hard time finding people who don't want to do that. And then also understanding that the kind-hearted people, you know, I was watching these great people degrade on that social media using those like buttons, using those emoji, and they're starting to feel like, well, everything that I'm feeling can be transmitted through these little buttons. And it's like, no, that's, you're losing. So as the like button increases the rewards for negativity, it's also shrinking the articulation of positivity. And so the kind-hearted people and the good-natured, their ability to communicate is just shrinking and shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. So, again, that's why we go back to what we used to have. And I did that with the Q&A for the episodes just to get you going, just to get you started. Some people rely on them. Some people don't need them. But if you go to thepitofultimatedarkshadows.wordpress.com, and that's just the episode list, and you scroll down and you pick an episode and you scroll down again, the questions will be there. And just try to get your thought processes moving in the direction of discussing the narrative, understanding the narrative, and possibly having fun with it in a non-hateful way, a good humor, positivity. Because I have heard from enough people, this show is making me feel better. But then they get distracted with other things that just wipe them out for stress. And it's like, well, then come back to the pit and feel better. That's why I shared it. It changed my life. It cured so much of my anhedonia. And as far as I know, there's not really much of a cure for that. So it was just something complex that happened. And, yeah. But I still had, because of the anhedonia, the frigidity problem. And the marriage novel quite accidentally healed that too. Yeah. So just getting people in touch, you know, it doesn't have to be everybody. I've gotten the feeling that this is really not for everybody. This is for a small group of concerned citizens. That's all this is for. To maybe put something brighter into the world with their abilities and talents and skills and ability to enjoy things, ability to digest narrative and know who all the characters are, and just going, oh, wow, at this, and oh, gosh, at that, and wow, yeah, that would be nice. So, as I sit here in my pretty regular solitude, trying to talk to people who might be in unusual solitude, I hope this helps. And I hope that if you go back to old programs, you can understand what I'm saying. And if you don't, you won't be shy about asking me what I said. So I hope all y'all are doing good and getting better and healing and looking for things to do that are more constructive than giving your attention to web companies who are only out to get your attention to make more money from your attention. And, take care.